The Bible played a key role in helping to create the United States of America. In fact, Andrew Jackson once called the Bible the rock upon which our republic rests. It's interesting to note that some archaeological findings in Israel generally help to confirm the Bible. Dr. Titus Kennedy is the author of a new book entitled Archaeology and the People of the Bible, exploring evidence for the historical existence of Bible characters. In a previous discussion, to which we'll link, Titus gave an overview of his book, and today he joins us to discuss more of how the Bible confirms or helps to confirm the scriptures. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and I think today we'll focus a lot on the New Testament. And Dr. Titus Kennedy, welcome back to the program. And before we plow into our discussion today, how about just a quick overview on archaeology and the Bible? I've heard some people say things like, well, archaeology proves the Bible. And then I've heard archaeologists say, no, that may be an overstatement. It's much more reliable to say archaeology confirms the Bible. And occasionally there are things that they find that they don't yet know how to conform it to the Bible. And then later other discoveries will show, oh, yeah, the Bible was right after all.
I think a good way to frame it is to, as you said, it confirms, archaeology confirms many aspects of the biblical narrative. We could also say that archaeology demonstrates or shows the historical accuracy or historical reliability of the Bible, because archaeology by itself cannot prove the Bible as a whole, but what it can do is give us information into those historical aspects of the Bible. And so it's very helpful. It's, I think, one of the most helpful side disciplines when looking at and studying the Bible, because not only does it confirm the accuracy in many of these different narratives, but it also helps us to better understand the Bible in its ancient context.
Okay, and basically the stones themselves have to be interpreted. In other words, you have to figure out, okay, what layers of strata are we dealing with and that kind of thing. So the whoever the archaeologist, I mean, let's say you have almost an anti-Bible archaeologist, if there, you know, such a person, they might interpret the rocks one way, whereas someone like yourself might interpret them differently. How does that work?
Yeah, you're right. I might elaborate on that a little bit and say that we sort of have three different levels. So we have the data itself, that is the stones, so to speak, coming out of the ground, the artifacts, the architecture, which that doesn't change. There's physical reality there.
Right? And those stones don't have little notices saying, oh, this is from King Herod the Great. The Bible was right after all. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, so everyone's measurements should be the same. Everyone's photographs should be the same. But then the second level is interpretation. So we do have interpretation in archaeology, things like how do you associate this layer with this layer, or what is the meaning of this inscription, or, you know, what period was this pottery made in? And the interpretation, archaeological interpretation of layers or artifacts or architecture doesn't vary that much. It can sometimes, but it usually doesn't. It's when we get to the level three, which is the conclusions drawn, that's when you start to see a very huge divergence between different archaeologists, often based on whatever their biases or preconceived notions or agendas are. And so we can be looking at the same data. We can maybe even be interpreting the artifacts and the layers in very similar ways, but then our conclusion might be radically different because, as you said, there may be a sort of an anti-biblical archaeologist who's coming into the excavation with the intent to disprove or show that the Bible's record about this location is false. And so their conclusions may not actually follow from the data or even the interpretation of the data.
Hmm. All right, and now let's focus on the New Testament. Let's start with Herod the Great. What does archaeology have to shed light on Herod the Great?
A whole lot, actually, on Herod the Great. So Herod was the founder, we could say, of this dynasty of people that then took his name, Herod, as sort of the family or dynastic name. Although he actually had a father who was quite powerful, and so he didn't just emerge out of nothing. But he was very tight with the Romans, and so they propped him up, and he became the king of Judea. And it was from this point on when we start to see him all over the archaeological record, because he was one of the most prolific builders in ancient times in the Roman period. And so people know him especially for rebuilding the temple or remodeling the temple. But he built all over, not just the territory of Judea, but he also had projects in neighboring provinces as well. Now, since he was a king, he issued his own coins, and those coins have his name and his title on them, Herod the King. So this is very obvious and firm archaeological evidence for King Herod the Great. But there are many, many inscriptions as well that talk about Herod, make reference to him or his years of rule when something was built or something happened. We have Josephus writing basically a biography of Herod's life. And so all of this connects, though, to the Bible, because Herod the Great was the king of Judea when Jesus was born. And although it was only a short time until Herod died after Jesus was born, we see him appear in these gospel narratives, and he had a big influence because he tried to kill Jesus. And we see that in the Gospel of Matthew, sometimes called the Massacre of Innocents. And this is one of those narratives, this historical narratives in the Bible, that some scholars are very skeptical of or question. They say, why is this only recorded in Matthew? And this is just a theological story that didn't really happen in order to connect it to the Old Testament. But if we look into what we know from Herod, from ancient sources, we see that trying to kill those babies, trying to kill Jesus and ended up killing the babies, is perfectly consistent with what he did the last about 3 years of his reign, because he had become exceptionally paranoid about losing his power, about someone else taking his kingship, just like we see in Matthew. And so he even had some of his sons executed during that period because he thought that they were trying to take his. So just because this historian Josephus doesn't talk about those babies being killed in Bethlehem doesn't mean it didn't happen. What we see historically, perfectly in line with the text of Matthew.
Was it Caesar Augustus who said something like, I would rather be a pig in Herod's household than a son, or something like that, something to that effect? And by the way, was Herod Jewish? Yes. In any way, or partly Jewish?
No, Herod was not, and that was one of the problems with his rule. So there was always tension between the people he ruled, the Jews in the kingdom of Judea, and himself, because although Herod quote unquote converted to Judaism, he was a descendant of Nabataeans and Edomites. So people to the south of Israel and people to the east of Israel that had, at least that at times, had historically been enemies of the Israelites. And so he was always viewed by the people as an outsider. And although he tried to ingratiate himself by doing things like remodeling or rebuilding the whole temple, the people never really accepted him. And of course, he didn't really follow Judaism that close either. And when he died and was buried in this elaborate tomb at Herodium near Bethlehem, which was excavated and discovered not too long ago, what the archaeologists found there is that his mausoleum and his sarcophagus had been smashed in ancient times. And so this was probably done not long after death by people who never really liked him.
So Herod the Great was more of a son of Esau than a son of Israel. Fascinating. Okay, what do we know about Jesus as far as archaeology of around that time?
We know a bit about Jesus from archaeology. We know a whole lot about the places Jesus went and people that he interacted with. But I would say you start with this claim that there's no historical evidence that Jesus, or that he wasn't a historical person. And to give an answer to that, we can say that there are five authors, some historians, others philosophical writers, who lived in the first century. Some of them wrote in the second, but they lived also in the first century, who mentioned Jesus or Christ, his title Christ, in their writings. And that's Josephus, Serapion, Tacitus, Pliny the Younger, and Suetonius. So just from those sources of people that lived in the first century, who, by the way, none of them were Christians, we know that Jesus was a historical person, and we could reassemble many aspects of his life on earth just from first and second century writings outside of the Bible. But when we get into archaeological artifacts, there are three in particular that I like to highlight. The first is called the James Ossuary. It's this bone box, because in Jewish burials of the first century, they would first put someone either in a grave in the ground or in a tomb for about a year, and then they would go back and they would collect the bones, and they'd put the bones in these boxes, and those boxes would go on a shelf in the tomb. And in some cases, they would inscribe those stone bone boxes. And so we have a lot of inscriptions telling us the name of the person who is buried in there. And then sometimes they'll have their father's name or the place where they're from or their occupation. That's fairly typical. But there's a bone box that says, with this Aramaic inscription, it's found in Jerusalem from pre-70 AD. It says, James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. And just reading that, and based on where it's found and when it's found, you know, this set off alarm bells in the head of a lot of scholars, because it sounds a whole lot like Jesus Christ and his brother James and the father Joseph. In fact, Josephus, this famous first century historian, he is well aware of this relationship and mentions James, the brother of Jesus, who is called Christ. But when we look into all these ossuary inscriptions, what we see is that only one other one mentions the brother. So we know this brother is exceptionally important, and he is tacked on to the end as, hey, you should know about this brother. And then a statistic.
That brother being done, Jesus. That brother being Jesus.
Yeah, the brother okay. Jesus is very important. They wanted people to know, you know, who this James was and that his brother was Jesus. A statistical study was done using the percentage use of names from that period, like James, Joseph, Jesus, how often were they used, and the approximate population of Jerusalem at that time. And it came up statistically that there would be less than two people with that relationship of names. So this Jesus, who had a brother named James, who had a father named Joseph. And there are other things that factor into this, but it's almost certain that this is talking about Jesus Christ. So that is a first century from Jerusalem inscription mentioning Jesus. All right, archaeologically.
Can I ask you about this real fast? And by the way, we have less than a minute to go. There was controversy when that first came out, and I think the guy was even arrested, and, you know, are you forging this? Yep. But he's been vindicated, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It was a decade-long antiquities trial, but it was examined by so many different scholars from different disciplines, chemists and epigraphers and geologists. And basically it affirmed its authenticity, and it's one of the most studied artifacts, and nobody could show that it was a forgery. So,
oh my goodness, that's fantastic. So the guy was vindicated. Jesus was vindicated, if you will.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
The other two, just quickly, I would point people to this cup from Egypt that says, through
seconds.
Christ the magician, seeming to refer to his title, and then something called the Alexamenos graffito from Rome at the end of the first century that shows the earliest depiction of Jesus on the cross.
Oh, wow. All right, well, we don't have any more time, but discovery.org for more information. Let me give the title of your book again. It is Archaeology and the People of the Bible, Exploring Evidence for the Historical Evidence of Bible Characters. Thank you so much, Dr. Titus Kennedy. All the best.